So if you would like to just take a moment to fill your answers in on column A. Column A just now, and I'll explain column B in a minute. There we go. Whoop. Another one over here. And if you would like to come and join me, because it's not very many of us, if you're sitting at the back, I would love it if you came a little bit closer to the front. Has everybody got one?
Very impressed, thank you. It's nice to be friendly.
If you're just coming in, welcome. It's great to see you. You just need to make sure you've got one of our little questionnaires and you can just take a minute to fill it in, put your answers in there. There should be some at the end of your row. Hopefully people can share with you. How are you doing for questionnaires? Have you got enough to share along there? That's great. And if you got in nice and early and you finished your questionnaire, this might be one of the very few peaceful moments at the whole conference. And there actually are a couple of seats where you can actually get Wi-Fi. So just enjoy for a moment while we let the others catch up. We'll get going in a minute or so. Oh, fantastic. You got to fill in your questionnaire. Okay, hopefully you've had a chance to reflect about how you spend your time, and we'll be using that in a couple of moments. Today I'm basing my message on unlocking the door, which if you came last year, we spent a lot of time talking about this book because we were very excited it had just been launched. But actually this book is Activate's key message. I'm not just here to plug the book, I'm just here to talk about Activate as a friendship evangelism organization. So what do we mean by friendship evangelism? Well, I had the privilege of meeting Danielle Strickland. Has anybody met or heard Danielle Strickland? She's in the Salvation Army. She lives in Canada at the moment, and she's a fabulous speaker. So I said to her, what do you think of friendship evangelism? And she said, do I believe in friendship evangelism? Is there any other kind? Which was, I found very encouraging, because that's very much what we do here at Activate. And then this is what Canon J. John said. Most teaching on evangelism produces more guilt than fruit. This is a blessed exception, inspired, inventive, and wonderfully encouraging. Read and live it out, it works. And what we do in Activate is actually try and be all those things, inspiring, inventive, and encouraging, rather than putting you off having a go at evangelism. And then we ask the question, why do we need another evangelism resource? And this was an actual quote from a friend of mine. I work at a Bible college, and this is one of my colleagues there who said, I do not have any friends outside my church circle, not even one. And I did find that quite surprising, really. He was a very busy person, very, very much believed in Jesus, very much believed in evangelism, just didn't actually have any friends who weren't Christians. So that's really why I've given you that little questionnaire, so that we can start to think about how we spend our time. These steps here are ones that we find very helpful. This is called the Engel Scale. And it talks about the 10 steps that people make before they become committed to Christ. And very often in churches and parachurch organizations, they're actually focusing on the top steps. We all love Alpha. It's in a fantastic resource that's going around, not just in Britain, but the whole of the country and worldwide. But actually, even Alpha really talks about the top steps, that you're expecting people to already have those early stages before they even come to Alpha, and then you just work with them towards the stop steps. Now at Activate, we're really sometimes working on the first three or four steps, because there are so many people in our country today who have no awareness of God. It's like Lawrence was saying earlier, that incredible statistic that so many people don't even know that Jesus was a real historical figure. So no awareness of God. And you have to move them to some awareness of God, and then contact with Christians. And actually, some of them genuinely will be living in streets and workplaces and friendship groups where there are no Christians. There's no salt. There's no light. There are no Christians for them to meet. So in Activate, we're very much trying to encourage people to be that contact that will take people from steps 1 to 5 to 6 and then on. Of course, we love it when we're there, when our friends pray that prayer and take that step and become Christians. That's amazing. But sometimes we have to be the ones in the early steps, and we do all the groundwork and we don't see that final harvest. And that can sometimes be God's plan, that we're just part of someone's story. Okay. I want you to have another look at your sheet. Pick it up. And in column B, I want you to write down how many of those answers in column A are with non-Christians. So, for instance, of your 10 best friends, just jot down how many of them are non-churched, non-Christians, don't know Jesus. How many of those activities or sports did you do with non-church, non-Christians? How much of your weekday time do you spend with your non-Christian friends? You see what I mean? So each time, just kind of slightly adapt it so that you can put an answer in column B that shows how much of your world you spend with people that don't yet know Jesus. I'll just give you a minute. I'll stop talking so you can do that. Okay, do you get a kind of sense or an overall general picture as you work through that? Does anybody want to share their kind of overall picture? All eye contact is immediately lost. Go for it, Joy. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So I have very little time to spend with people outside the church, just because I don't have any time outside work.
Yes.
But I spend most of my time with my colleagues
are not Christians.
So I've adapted the list on the left, and thought, okay, people actually spend most time with.
Yes. Yeah, that's good. That's a good way of looking at it. So you are spending a lot of your time with non-Christians. It's just when you look at it within, including the work context. That's good. Anybody else have anything interesting that they felt, oh gosh, I didn't realise it was that kind of a picture that I was living my life with? Generally speaking, I've found that people who have become Christians recently still have a higher percentage of their friends and their hobbies and their time with other non-Christians. That actually they're in the best place to talk about Jesus because they're still fully connected with normal people, with people who don't yet know Jesus. Whereas the longer you're a Christian, somehow, although we maybe don't intend for that to happen, we do end up spending more and more of our time with other Christians. And there's loads of very, very good, sound biblical reasons for that. We do need the support of other Christians. You're here on a Christian weekend. We need to learn with each other. We need to encourage each other. We need to pray together, read the Bible together, worship together. But if that becomes your whole life pattern, and your time at church and your church commitments and your ministry is so huge that you've left this tiny little percentage, then that might be worth looking at and thinking, I might have to rethink my life and how I spend the bits of it that I do have a choice about, so that I could have a more outward looking life. And that's the title of this talk, an outward looking life. So how do we do that practically? Okay, this is a picture that I love. I hope it comes up on the screen so that you can see it well. Down in the corner, this is a picture of a river that was in Honduras. There was a massive, I think it was a flood, and there was also an earthquake, and all sorts of things were happening geographically. And when the engineers came back, the bridge that these amazing Japanese engineers had built had stood firm. The bridge was still there, entirely intact and utterly useless, because the river had moved. The river now didn't even touch the bridge. And sometimes I think in our churches or in our parachurch organizations, we concentrate all our efforts on standing firm and being strong and repairing ourselves and not being damaged and presenting a strong image to the world. But we might be utterly useless if the world has moved. And I think it's so helpful what Lawrence said today about how culture has changed so much in the last 60, 100 years, even 10 years, so that the questions we think people are asking perhaps haven't even entered their head. And instead, they've got a whole lot of other issues that they would love someone to address with them and present to them. And we're not doing that because we have stood firm and the foundations that we think are important. So that's a great picture to try and think about how we might have to move. And Winnie the Pooh's got a great line on that as well. Are we now living in ancient Athens? Modern Britain resembles ancient Athens, plus mobile phones and parking problems. The reason I like this is because we know what happened when Paul was there and he went to Athens and he engaged with their culture. He looked around, he learnt what they were talking about. What were they pondering? What were they discussing? What were the important issues in their lives? And that's what he addressed. I sometimes think Paul was probably very good at his preparation. He probably arrived beforehand. He had this great sermon he was going to do. And then when he was there, he looked around and realized what they were debating and what was written on their walls and chucked it all out and gave a new sermon. I don't know. Maybe I'll ask him in heaven. How did Jesus reach his world? There's a plethora of great Bible verses there. Sometimes I've heard people say, well, friendship evangelism, that's not in the Bible. Jesus didn't do that. And I think, really? Where'd you get that from? I think that Jesus was incredibly relational. It's one of the very many reasons that he is worth following and that he's very appealing. He was very relational in the way that he worked and who he spent his time with. And we look at all those examples and the different ways he used to get his message across. And we can try and be as creative as he was. And then look at his master plan. What was Jesus' master plan with evangelism? Speak peace to them, spend time with them, take care of their needs, and proclaim the good news. Yet when we say the words evangelism, which one of those four do we think immediately comes into our heads? Proclaim the good news. So I've had people say to me, it's all very well you're doing this evangelism organization, but I'm not an evangelist. And what they might mean by that is they wouldn't see themselves being capable of or even fancying standing on a street corner speaking in a loud voice to strangers. Well, that's me. I would not like to stand on a street corner and speak in any kind of a voice to strangers. I would be absolutely terrified. I would be awful at it. In fact, it's not what I think of as evangelism. It certainly isn't what I think of as God's calling for me. And yet, if we look at Jesus' plan, if we look at those four things, then I think, yes, absolutely. That's how I'd like to spend my life. That's how I'd like to pour out the energy and the time that I do have. Speak peace to them, spend time with them, take care of their needs. And then, number four, proclaim the good news. Because actually then you've earned the right in some ways for people to be even interested in you. Or why should I listen to you? But if those first three have happened, then number four will be a natural progression. Okay, so you may be saying to me, that's all very well, but I am too busy. Does anyone ever feel like their lives are like spinning plates? Come on, be honest. Would anyone actually like to come out with me for 1 minute and have a go at spinning plates? I have actually got some plates here. Now, don't all just sit there. I'll pick on you if you don't come. I need some volunteers.
They won't play. We might come and have a go. Have you ever actually tried?
When you see these ladies spinning here, what are the plates that you are spinning in your life? What are the ones that you are trying to keep going? Because if you just feel, if you don't pay attention to it or keep it going at the right speed, it will collapse. Thank you very much. We've done very well. That's brilliant. Well done. Thank you. Thank you for being volunteers. Here's some plates here. Your plates might look a bit different from this. Your work plate might be responsibilities, it might not be paid work, it might be paid work. Your friends. I did actually hand this questionnaire out recently, and a young man came and said to me, I have no friends, not even one. So we needed to have a long chat after that. But that wasn't the plate he was spinning. I know, very sad. Family. That might be a plate that's just absolutely ginormous at this stage in your life, and that's actually pretty much the only one that you're able to spin. It might be that you have hobbies, and that might include fitness and working out and keeping healthy. And then you've got church. Perhaps that's a ginormous burden of a very heavy plate that is extremely difficult to spin. And then you say to me, after all that, you expect me to fit outreach in as this one extra plate. That's just ridiculous. It's not possible. How can I possibly fit outreach into that picture? Okay, let's look at it a little bit differently. Okay. Now, Joy was very interesting because she immediately knew that her picture was not just about who she spent her time with friends. She said, my work colleagues, that's who I spend my time with. So immediately, Joy's work, she knows, and I know that she does it, that's a huge part of her outreach. That's probably where she does most of her outreach. And the hobbies that you do, if you were able to look at the hobbies and know that you spend time with your neighbours and people in your community, then that's your outreach. That's where you are doing, you're naturally being salt and light. That's where it's happening. In your family, quite possibly within your family, you have people who are not yet Christians. Or it might be people who were Christians at one time and are now really struggling. So spending time with your family, for most of us, is also outreach. And in your church, it might well be that there's many people who sit in the pews who come along each week and actually have no personal relationship with Jesus. They don't actually know. So within your church, as well as signing up for the evangelism program and setting up events that you invite people to, actually just being there week after week, connecting with people, really listening to people, asking honest questions and being there to listen to the answers will be part of your outreach. So you can take away that one that's all by itself saying outreach, so let's just put Jesus in. And then the whole picture looks a lot more balanced and you can kind of cope with that if Jesus actually, he'd be the big overarching thing over it all. Jesus is there. So that picture is a little bit more copeable with. That's actually just you getting on with your normal life and outreach happening as part of everything that you're spending your time with anyway. And then it's not such an impossible task that you think, can't ask me to do that. Okay, we're going to have a flick through now of some rooms of a house. And they're just a metaphor to give you some very practical ideas. So that all these plates we've got here, ways of making your life look an outward life, ways of making it so that in your workplace, with your friends, you can start to make connections with Jesus, that you can do that outreach so naturally that other people don't think it's odd. They just see it's part of who you are and what you do. So we're going to whiz through lots of very practical ideas. I'm going to tell you lots of them. Quite a few of them you'll probably say, that is so not me, I couldn't bear that. Well, that's fine. Hopefully on the next screen there might be one that you think, oh, I could do that. Yeah, that's me. That's kind of what I already do. That makes sense to me. So we're going to go through the front door with our little Kia person and into the lounge. Okay, who's really into films? Anybody like films? You could join a film club. You could set up a film club within your own house, and it's very, very simple. Just get a DVD or get a subscription or just turn it on the telly, invite a few friends round, watch a film together and then chat about it afterwards. Nothing complicated, something you might already be doing naturally. Just look at it as a way of connecting with people. I know a few people who go to a discussion group once a month. They just email each other a kind of a topical question and they gather together and they're all about the same age group. And they have nothing complicated snack-wise, doesn't have to be a big feast, but they're very open and honest with each other and have a discussion group. So both of those, my word of caution would be, don't think, right, I'm going to do this as outreach. So in week two, I'm going to make sure I mention John 3:16. And in week three, I'm going to make sure that I tell them that they're all sinners. I know you wouldn't do that because you've come to a conference like this, so you wouldn't do that. But just don't even be tempted to think that unless I talk about the gospel, sin, Jesus and redemption early on, it's not outreach. Because actually, if you remember those 10 steps, just the fact that they will come to your house and start to get connected with you and be your friend is very, very important. So don't think that you have to get in there very, very quickly. It'd be much better if you had those relationships, you were having good discussions, and then they started to say to you, oh, what do you think about that? I mean, you seem like a person who has faith. Tell me about that. And then you go for it then, rather than trying to set it up. Ashkey parties. Outside today, you can meet Julia Crellin, who has the most beautiful jewellery. And she can send you a box of her beautiful jewellery. And you just invite people round and say, would you like to come round? I'm having a jewellery party. And people are quite comfortable with that idea. They know that you'll be trying to sell something. But you can talk to them about the kind of project that Ashkey is, and that all the money goes straight back into the women in Peru and supporting families and transforming communities here. So that's a very, very natural and easy way. The jewellery is very well priced. Well Woman Workshops. Anybody experienced that one? Anybody been along to one of them? It's a great organisation and really great for empowering women and women looking after each other, supporting each other. Okay, moving to the kitchen. I know that we have some good cooks here. I know that we have people who could totally use this because they actually love cooking. The easiest thing for them would be to invite their friends around and have a good meal. Or you can think of some creative ways how you can do this. Bread making, quite trendy at the moment. You could do it with a bread machine. Even trendier, just use your hands, get into different kinds of bread and do that together. If, like me, cooking's not a huge part of your life, you just have chocolate. It's always a good thing. No one ever minds if you talk about chocolate. You can find new ways of talking about chocolate. You can say, we're going to have a fair trade chocolate evening and compare different tastes of fair trade together. Or that's a good one. Cake club, that was really trendy last year. Some of my friends did that once a month. So the idea is, they weren't into cupcakes. That was like, no, not good. Had to be proper cakes. That's why I didn't go. And they all made a proper cake and brought it once a month. Talked about what the ingredients were, how they decided on it, and then they all tasted each other's cakes and then took home the rest of it. Sounded great, probably put on quite a lot of weight, but they were all really excited about it. It was a new thing and they were loving it, so that was great. If that's what your friends are interested in, then you can go for that. Sometimes you have to think of it. If you're really going for an outward-looking life, don't necessarily think, this is what I love. Think, I have a friend who would love that, and if we did that together, she would love it. So then it'll be worth it. to try and think outside the box. As a reverse to all the chocolate and cake, you could also go for a healthy eating type night, do something like that. And if all those things sound absolutely awful, just phone up for a takeaway, invite people round. They will be probably more comfortable than any of those others. So actually, you're not setting yourself up as some kind of brilliant hostess or perfect person. You're just ordering a takeaway and sharing it with them. And that's actually a very refreshing way of having an outward life. Okay, I'm just going to say it now. Most of these ideas are Rhiannon's. Have you met Rhiannon? She's buzzing about here. She does an incredible amount of community stuff, and she just makes it happen. So bring your roast dinner was her idea. I think she did the meat, is that right? I think she said, I will make the roast meat you and to a group of friends. You bring the other bits of a roast dinner. And they were all like, oh yeah, well, I can do carrots. And somebody said, yeah, I can do the roast potatoes. And someone said, I'll bring the gravy. And they just gathered with all their kids, and it sounded fabulous. I think she did make, you know, did her table up quite nicely. And then it wasn't, no one person felt like it was that expensive or that difficult, but they're able to enjoy a good roast dinner together. I thought that was a lovely idea. Thanksgiving is another really good one. Whether or not you're into the American culture, you can invite people around, and at the end of the meal,